This is the Retro Rundown with Bart and Josh.
Welcome to the Retro Rundown. I'm Josh.
And I'm Bart.
All right, Bart, what you been doing this week since last time we talked?
Oh, man, I haven't been playing many games. I've actually spent most of my week trying to set up stuff for the podcast. I know you've been working on the website, getting that straight, and I've been trying to get the feed straight to go on iTunes. I actually just made a video out of the first podcast and put it on YouTube. So if any of the listeners want to check it out, go to YouTube. It's just look for Retro Rundown Episode 1. It's not like a video of us talking or anything. It's really just a podcast. And I threw on a few pictures of what we were talking about. Like when we were talking about the Odyssey, I put a picture of the Odyssey. When we were talking about screw variations, show a picture of the 5-screw and the 3-screw cards. So nothing special, but, you know, if you ever want to just throw it on YouTube and listen to it that way, I'm going to try to do that with all our episodes.
Thing though, like I checked out and, yeah, some pretty good images there. When I was watching, I was like, maybe we can add an image here and there. So, I mean, in the future, we'll probably a redone version of that with a little bit more. So there'll be a little bit more image change to keep your eyes entertained if you want to watch it when you listen to it.
It was more something I was just doing to pass the time, and I just went through and added it. It's not going to win an Oscar for sure. You know what I mean?
No, but it was still pretty good done. Like I said, the transitions were pretty spot on.
So what you been up to, man, this week? You been playing anything?
Like I said, I was doing SimCity a little bit earlier this week, and after that, you know, like the DRM stuff, I got into it, and then...
Man, how's that blowing up on the internet, man? I haven't even played the game, but just the backlash, I think, is worse than what it was for Spore.
Because this time the DRM's really hitting hard because they were getting, you know, double, triple the volume than they were expecting because they were, like, basing things on the beta numbers. But you really can't do that, and they did a misstep, and now they're trying to offer a free game on Origins, giving you a free game if you already bought SimCity. So I'm looking forward to that, although I'm not looking forward to using Origins.
Well, yeah, what game is it going to be? I'm trying to think. Unless it's Battlefield 3 or something of that magnitude, I guess we'll just have to see. If it ends up being some budget title, to me, that doesn't really help.
No, it doesn't. And they just said you're going to get a free game. They never specified which one. They didn't say if you get a pick yet. But it made it sound like you're going to pick what you want. So I might end up with Battlefield 3 because I don't own it yet and perfect opportunity to get it if that's the case.
Well, they might let you decide between SimCity 4 or Spore or something like that.
Other than that, I moved over to try to start up playing DC Universe again, but I just set up a character. I haven't really gotten into playing it again. I only did the beta on the PS3 originally, found it kind of fun, but then it was still charged at the time. When they went free-to-play, I haven't jumped back into it yet.
Now, you see, I never played any superhero MMOs at all. Is it any good? I mean, how is it different from, like, a Guild Wars? Or, you know, like a fantasy MMOs.
You know me. I don't play a lot of MMORPGs. The one I played the most would probably be Guild Wars, so I guess I can kind of compare it to that. Like a lot of those games you have where, well, Guild Wars is not like Alliance and Horde. You just kind of play a character and you have these main missions. And in DC Universe, it kind of goes with the World of Warcraft thing, where instead of having Horde and Alliance, you have villain and hero. And then it has that kind of duality. They try to focus a little bit more on... trying to insert your character into the DC universe, so there's a little bit more story than some other aspects in Guild Wars, at least. I can't really speak for World of Warcraft that much. The cool thing is you get these mentors, and they picking those mentors help like decide what kind of equipment you get. It's almost like picking a class when you pick the mentor.
What mentors can you pick from?
Well, on the good guy side, you have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. You have your basic three, your DC top.
Superman's kind of unfair. It's like, hey, I can do anything.
But he's your mentor. He's not who you're playing.
If Superman exists in the world, why does any... I mean, he can go faster than everybody else and stronger and is invincible. Why doesn't he just fix everything?
You know, Bart, I would really like to go into this, but we're not really a comic book okay. podcast, are we?
I got you. You're right. I don't know. That's my problem anytime I get into the comic book universe. I can't suspend my disbelief enough. So I never could quite get into the comic book.
You're just like Superman. Why do we need anybody else? That's the only comic we should have.
What I'm saying is if Superman can get outsmarted by basically Mitt Romney, it doesn't make any sense to me. You know what I mean?
Fair enough. But, you know, Lex Luthor is more than, you know, Mitt Romney. He is super intelligent. He would be like Einstein and Stephen Hawking having a kid, is kind of with the level of intelligence they put on him.
So you're saying that if Einstein and Stephen Hawking had a kid, he would be an evil villain?
Maybe so.
Well, I guess he would have to because somehow they made two sperm interact and create a child.
Clearly.
Okay. I think we've tangent enough off of the main subject. So, hey
Exactly.
man, what happened this week in gaming?
This week in gaming, the first Unreal Tournament was released on the Dreamcast.
Unreal, the first, is that the first Unreal tournament ever, or was that just the first one released on Dreamcast?
I believe it's the first one released on a console. I can't say if it was released on PC. I just know when I was looking at updates and whatnot, what came down was Unreal Tournament is released on Dreamcast.
Okay, now you see, I only ever played Unreal on the PC, and I mean, I enjoyed it. The flat gun and everything. I had fun with it with my friends, but I surely never played it on the Dreamcast. What about you?
No, I never played on the Dreamcast. As a matter of fact, I didn't play Unreal Tournament all that much at all, so I really can't talk too much about it, but I think it's an interesting aspect to go about, which is that it's another one of those great games that was on the Dreamcast that a lot of people probably don't realize is on the Dreamcast unless you're a dream, you know, you collect for a Dreamcast. And it's just a sad thing that, you know, Dreamcast kind of died before it probably should have.
You see, I don't have that big of a Dreamcast collection, but I do have a Dreamcast, and I had a buddy of mine make me quite a number of backup copies. And we tried out, and their library for the short time Dreamcast was in its stride, there was a lot of games released for it. I mean, it is almost shocking that Dreamcast didn't catch on with the amount of good titles. I mean, maybe that's a whole nother subject. I don't know enough about the Dream. I was around for it, but maybe I don't know about the downfall of Dreamcast. It surprises me that it failed with as many quality titles as it had.
And like you said, it's something that we need to get into for another time. That can be a whole show upon itself.
Ralph Baer.
Yeah, Ralph Baer. Ralph Baer turned 91
Well,
today.
we forgot. We were talking about it after the show last week. We were like, oh, well, that could have been this week in gaming. By the way, the person who created the video game just turned 91. So, happy belated birthday to Ralph Baer.
Yeah, happy birthday, Ralph Baer.
All right, so on to the news.
Now on to the news.
All right, hey, Josh, you want to take the first one? The Retron 4.
Ah, yes, the Retron 4. I really am intrigued by this because Retron, in the last systems that they've been doing with their Famiclone combination cards, have always knocked it up. They did, you know, the Retron 1 that just did NES games, and the Retron 2 that NES and Super Nintendo games, and then the third one did Sega, you know, and the previous two. Now the fourth one is not only bringing in the Sega, the NES, the Super Nintendo, and Game Boy Advance, they're also having you have HDMI output, which is going to be the first time you actually have legitimate high definition connections for your retro games. How is it going to be on actual quality? I don't know, because a lot of those older games were made for the old TVs, so I'm sure there's still going to be some like stretching issues with the graphics, but at least it's nice to know that there's a Famiclone out there working to make it where it's compatible with your more modern TVs.
Now, I never played on the Retron systems before. Do you have to use a Retron controller?
No, you don't. At least not with the Retron 3. I recently purchased it. Been having some fun playing around with it. I'm gonna mod it soon, to make it look a little bit steampunkish. But no, you can actually plug in your actual NES controllers, your Super Nintendo controllers, and your Sega controllers. And with the Genesis, you also have to remember you could use an Atari controller if you wanted to, because they are compatible with each other.
So on the Retron, could you, like, let's say all you had was a Super NES controller. Could you use a Super NES controller to play all four systems?
I haven't tried it, but I don't think so.
So you wouldn't be able to use your Super NES controller to play your NES or your Genesis.
I do not believe, but don't quote me on that.
Okay, so how would you play your Game Boy Advance games?
Well, once
Like,
again, this is going to be the Retron 4. There might be something completely different for that. Maybe you can play different
I got it.
controllers.
Yeah, because I'm reading the news and yeah, it says they'll feature six controller ports, two for each non-portable system, alongside the four different cartridge slots. But yeah, it doesn't exactly state how you're gonna. If you think about it, this you'll be playing Game Boy Advance games on TV, which I've never done. Now, the Super NES had the Super Game Boy. It did not have a Super Game Boy Advance, did it?
No, it didn't.
So yeah, that would be even if you so if you played on the Super NES controller, that'd be the first time you played those games with a Super NES controller then, right?
Yes, it would be. And like I said, it would be an interesting thing. They don't do the full announcement until the end of the month, so we got some time before we actually find out the full range of details on it.
Well, definitely. But hey, if they can keep it under $100, I think I know what I'm gonna want for my birthday.
Yeah, it would be a good investment.
Yep. So all right, I'll move on to the next piece of news. The next two pieces of news are both about arcade, old arcades coming to consoles. I'm gonna start with the F-Zero GX. Okay, I never actually played this game. Josh, you said you played it, right?
I've played a number of F-Zero games, but I never became a big follower of them, but I have played.
Okay, well, apparently F-Zero GX was a GameCube game that was released in 2003 by Sega and Nintendo together. And at the same time, they released F-Zero AX in arcade. Well, even since the beginning, they realized that there were some tracks on GX and AX were the same. And different people dug into the disc for GX and found some AX code. Well, just in November of last year, they found out they actually used a action replay and codes for the action replay to access the entire F-Zero AX arcade game on the GX. So now, if you have an F-Zero GX for GameCube, you can put it in your GameCube, type in a long list of action replay codes, which we're gonna have a link in the show notes to the article that has all the codes. But you put them in and you can actually play the arcade game, which was a pretty rare arcade game because at that time arcades wasn't very popular, you know?
Right.
And you can play the whole arcade game on your GameCube. So that's kind of neat. It's almost like having a brand new ported game for free with the game you've been having for 10 years.
I always like when they can kind of do stuff like the Game Genie-like devices where you can always add to the experience and have unlocked new levels. It's kind of awesome.
To be honest, I mean, I've never heard of anything this extensive coming off of a cart. I mean, there might be other examples of it, but I mean, I had a Game Genie back in the day. And yeah, sometimes you can unlock a secret level here and there that was unfinished or whatever. But to have an actual entire game inside of a game, I've never heard of that happening.
Oh, me neither. I mean, this is the first time I've heard of it, and like I said, it's very impressive. But I just like I said, when you could find those new things being added to these older games, and it just makes them replayable again. It's almost like how they used to have the old arcades, and they used to come up with a new board, add-on boards, so you almost have like a new arcade. Like, they did Donkey Kong, and then they did, I think it was Donkey Kong Jr., where it was just like you added on to the actual old arcade, you switch out the board, and bam, you got a new game, but everything else is still very similar.
Yep, I wanted to give credit where credit was due, but I'm not finding it, unfortunately. So I guess we're gonna move on.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show credits later. I mean, the
Yeah,
show notes
I'll put
later.
links for it in the show notes. Yeah, definitely. You always like to give credit to. I'm sure there was a. It says hackers, so I'm sure it was a team of guys working for a while to get this done. All right. So the last story we have today is Atari Age is releasing a Tempest cart for the Atari 5200. Josh, do you remember Tempest? Came out a long, long time ago.
Here it goes with Tempest on the arcade. I've never played. The only experience I've ever had with Tempest was Tempest 2000 on the Jaguar. So it was not the actual original game. It was, the semi remake or I guess a report of the arcade. I played it on that, and it was probably one of the better games on the Atari Jaguar.
Well, let me give you a read. This is directly from Atari Age. For 15 years, the existence of an Atari 5200 version of Tempest was thought to be only a myth. No prototype had ever surfaced. A crude 2600 version had come to light, along with a prototype box. Then, in 1999, an unfinished working 5200 prototype appeared on eBay. Well, it was eventually dumped and the binary freely distributed around the internet. Another decade has gone since the game's discovery, and the original Atari 5200 Tempest programmer, Keithan Hallinga, man, I'm terrible with these names, worked to complete Tempest, so it is now, it finally seen the light of day in completed form. So, and on the site, they have where you can order it. So, now you see, I didn't even notice that till just now. The actual original creator of the game has completed the cart now, what, almost 30 years after the original game came out, probably more than that. And they're starting to sell it. That, to me, that's pretty cool too. I mean, it was a game that never was on the 5200, and so this is almost like an official Atari release of the 5200. long, long time in the future, right?
Exactly. It's something I would like to see. Like, and you said there was a 2600 port, which I wasn't aware of. And I find that kind of funny because the arcade itself used vector graphics. And when you try to translate vector graphics to a system like the 2600, I don't see that working out well at all.
He did say a crude 2600 version. So, I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen some of the Atari ports of arcade games. They're pretty, some of them are pretty uninspired.
True. And like I said, I don't think the 52 version would be too much better, but.
Well, I mean, the 5200 had a little more power, but. I'm not a real big expert on Atari 5200 either.
Well, and that's the thing though. The big thing with the 5200 was that it was a huge system, and they didn't have any like swap out controllers. You had to use the controller that came with it, and it was just a horrible controller.
Well, I mean, that's all I got on that one. So that's all I got for the news, Josh.
Well, if that's all we have for the news, I guess we're gonna go take our first break and then dive right into our segment about the Odyssey 2.
Odyssey, video game fun, computer keyboard challenge, the entrance to an alternate world of fire-breathing dragons, hard-hitting sluggers, arcade wizards, outer space wizards. More than 40 games in all, Odyssey, the excitement of a game, the mind of a computer, all for the price of an ordinary video game, Odyssey.
All right, welcome back from the break. Now we're going to get into the Odyssey 2. Bart, tell me anything you might know about the Odyssey 2 before I get into my long spiel.
It came out after the Odyssey 1.
Yes, it did. It actually came out in 1987. It was
1987?
1987. Well, the first one came out in 1972.
No, it came out in 1978, Mr. Dyslexia.
There you go, 1987. What's the difference? What's the difference? It's just flip-flop? Dyslexia happens?
Well, one, I wasn't alive. The other one, I was five.
Okay. All right. So it came out in 1978. Are you happy now that we got the facts straight? Like, we need facts. Okay. So it came out in 1978, published by Magnavox. But the interesting thing about this was actually at the time, Magnavox had already been acquired by Philips. In the international market, it was released as the Video Pack 7000. The reason why this is important is going to be later on in the segment that I have to mention that Philips is involved with the Magnavox Odyssey. Worldwide, it sold about 2 million copies. Some of the cool things about the console is that it had the membrane keyboard on the actual console itself, which made it easier for programming games. And they also had a number of text-based games, so you could just type right into the console itself, and you could do some of those text-based parts. Like, they had a chess module add-on for the console, and you actually had to type in your move from, like, I am moving my pawn from A2 to A3, and that's how it moved. Kind of nifty. And they also had a voice synthesizer add-on, so that was all several neat things about the console itself.
You know that Odyssey 2 I was supposed to buy? I never did go pick it up, so I don't know anything about the Odyssey 2, really. Well, I know it came out the same year as the Atari and in television. Was it similar in power?
People mentioned that the graphics on the Odyssey 2 were a little bit lower than that, but it made up with the type of games that were available for it. While it wasn't thousands like on the other two, or, you know, the Intellivision was the sports, you know, had all the sports games on the Intellivision. So if you like sports games, you went there. Just like later on, you went with Sega, and now you go with Xbox. Well, with this one, you only had about 85 games in total, about 14 made from a third-party development, but it was pretty much all relatively quality games that were on the system. Also, another interesting thing about the actual carts, the carts had a handle on it. You could, like, grab the handle to pull your game out. It was real interesting. It's the only system where the carts had handles on them. I think I love the idea. I don't know why. I just think it's awesome.
Well, so you can carry them around.
That's right. It's kind of like an A-track thing going on for a moment. It was. I just really like that when it comes to it.
Now, you talked about it having a keyboard. Like, did it have Commodore 64? Could you program with BASIC on it, or did it have, like, programming carts? How did that work?
I'm not quite sure, but I know that certain games allow, within the game itself, it allowed you to do level editing and stuff like that.
Huh.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the biggest game that a lot of people know from the Odyssey 2 is KC Munchkin, and that actually was a big lawsuit. about how it was too similar to Pac-Man. Even though I've seen it played, I own a copy of it. It's different enough where that lawsuit shouldn't have ever actually made it through. I think it was ridiculous that it did, because it's kind of superior in comparison to the Atari 2600 version of Pac-Man.
Well, yeah, and if I remember correctly, there was quite a number of... I mean, I think one of my favorite games growing up was a game called Mousetrap that looked a whole lot like Pac-Man, where instead of Pac-Man, it was a mouse, and instead of the ghost, you had cats. So, I mean, yeah, which back then wasn't there. There was a lot of lawsuits being thrown around, right?
Yeah, there was tons of lawsuits back and forth. I mean, Donkey Kong and King Kong lawsuit was around that time. And, I mean, just that whole early age where, yeah, too many lawsuits. But Casey Munchkin, like I said, the interesting thing was that they didn't have said maps on the first game where you played it and the maps were, like, randomly generated, which was kind of cool. And you could, like I said, you can create your own levels in that game. So you had one of the first times in which you could create and play your own levels on a game. And this was, you know, back in 1978, 1979. And we didn't see that for a long time afterwards until probably like something like Excitebike.
Now, create your own levels. Was the level stored on the cartridge itself or was it stored on the system?
That's a good question. I'm assuming that it was only as long as you were playing it, so I'm going to assume it was on the system memory, and then once you turned it off.
So it was on the RAM itself. It wasn't. Now, it does say there 1,024 bits of ROM. Oh, it's BIOS ROM.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I got the Wikipedia page pulled up for the Odyssey right now, so I'm just reading over the specs right here. Now, what would be, like, if you wanted to collect for the Odyssey 2, what would be the games you're looking for? What are the high-dollar games that are hard to find?
Going back again, Casey Munchkin, because, one, it's probably known as one of the best games on the system. So a lot of people are looking to get Casey Munchkin. You also have what they call the Master Strategy games, which were these games that came with... They were board games that you played in component with the actual system. So that was kind of cool.
You mean that like you play with somebody else, but the board was on the system? Or you mean that the system played against you?
Okay, what it was like it aided. You had a board game, and one of them was called Quest for the Ring. And what Quest for the Ring was, it was essentially like a D&D-based game. It had very similar D&D-based rules, and they even had like a board game, and the board game had like this map on it, and you had your characters, and they had tokens that you would put in places. And what the game facilitated was the actual dungeons, because the map was like an over map. And so the game facilitated, like, the actual dungeons you were playing in.
Okay. So that's kind of... In fact, you know, I'm a video games price charting, and Quest for the Rings is the second most expensive game. At it looks like it'll run you around $25 for it, which, really, that's not too bad. Yeah, but Quest for the Rings is one of the rarer games, well, at least more expensive games on Odyssey 2, at around $25. But it looks like the games will run you in double digits for just about about half the library. Now, the games that you have, did you pick them up individually?
No, I picked them up as a bundle, and there's still something I need to go back and look through so I can see how many games I actually have and what I need to finish. I have Quest for the Ring. I just need to try to get my hands on the other two Master Strategy games, which one is Conquest of the World, and I don't know what the other one is. I need to look into that a little bit more.
The other one was, I actually have it here, the other one was Wall Street, The Great Wall Street Fortune Hunt.
Does not sound as awesome as the other two.
Well, speak for yourself. I love stuff like that.
I know you do.
That game sounds kind of cool. Now, of course, now you said you have Quest for the Ring. Do you have the board game that goes with it?
Yeah, it's a complete set.
Oh, well, that's cool. How much did it run you for that one?
Well, it was part of the bundle, like I said, and when, like we were talking a few weeks back, I picked up the whole thing for about $80. And I got about 20 games, and that was included with it, along with the system.
Well, that's kind of neat. Is that the only board game you got?
Yeah, that's the only board game I got. I was still pretty impressed when I got it.
Do you know what kind of hookups does it have?
RF, so we have to use...
So it does have RF hookups?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have to use a converter, but definitely, man. Maybe that's something we can do. We can play that and report back on if we were able to get Frodo. I mean, I have no idea what it's about.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing, though. I haven't played it yet, so I really don't know either. It would be an interesting experience and maybe something to report back on.
Sure. If we have an audience by then, maybe we could even live stream it.
Because as much as people, like, there are a few people who cover several games in the Aussie collection, but I haven't seen anyone cover any of the Master Strategy games, so it would be real awesome to do that. Deviating from that a little bit, just other games I want to mention real quick. Pickaxe Pete, which was a relatively popular game, similar to Donkey Kong. And the other one was Casey's Crazy Chase, which was a sequel to Casey Munchkin. Was still kept the kind of the chase formula, but what Magnavox slash Philips did for this was, one, it allowed them to use the voice modulator on it. And then they also had where, after the Pac-Man lawsuit, they were kind of sour. So in this game, you're chasing a caterpillar, and you have to eat his body in order to go to the next stage, which is just kind of funny because Caterpillar was one of the more popular Atari games on the arcade at the time. So they're still saying, ha, you want to get us for Pac-Man? Now we're going to do something a little bit different.
But so it sounds like they were almost chasing Atari, though, in a sense.
And they kind of were...
I got you. Now, I was looking through it. It looks like the rarest game. So for anyone that would want to go for a complete Odyssey 2 game set, it looks like the rarest game is a game called Power Lords. Right here, it's listed as the Holy Grail, the Odyssey 2, and the price charting. It's showing that at a used price of $82. Not a cheap one by far. And it says that it's the rarest North American game, scarce in Brazil, and was never released in Europe. And it doesn't, I'm looking at pictures of it, it looks like nothing too impressive, to be honest. You know how it is with rare carts. It's always those games that were never worth anything to play, but you can just never find. It end up being the games you spend the most money on to get complete sets.
It is, but I mean, when you look at it, if that's the only game you're missing to get a complete set and you have to pay $82, that's not bad for finishing a complete set of a system.
Now again, it says it's on price charts, so that $82 one could be just a cart by itself, you know, not in the box. Yeah, I mean, 82.
But it's hard. I'm gonna tell you now, almost every time I've come across a Magnavox Odyssey 2 game, it's been in the box.
Hmm.
And that's because, unlike Nintendo and whatnot, while it was still cardboard boxes, the art on it is really nice. The everything that comes with it is really well done. Like, the art in it is really nice for the time. It was nice finish, all color pages, everything was very polished with the box.
So it makes for a pretty good display, right?
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, I'm going to give a quick list. It looks like the most expensive games are Power Lords, Super Cobra, Q-Bert. So apparently there was a Q-Bert, Atlantis, Popeye, which, have you ever played Popeye for the Atari?
Yes, I have.
So I'm betting it's the same game. Commando, Naturo. And that's about it. That looks like that's all the ones that'll cost you more than $40 right there. So that's only about six titles. That's not too bad.
No, it's not. I mean, and then there's still other good games on it. Like, they did release Frogger released on it. That's about as far as big name. They had Spider-Man. They also released a Spider-Man game on it.
So did you hear anything about, like, on games that were on both systems? Was it one of the better quality ones, or you said that it's known for being lower quality when it comes to graphics?
To an extent, but I mean, there are only a few that actually cross sections, and that would be Frogger, Popeye, Q-Bert, and Super Cobra. And those are the only one, and I'm sorry, Atlantis, Demon Attack, because those were the third party. Everything else was done by Magnavox and only released on the Magnavox system. So there's only six games that you can really directly compare.
I got you. What, do you have anything else you want to cover on the Odyssey before we move on?
Yes, I do. Because everybody says, well, the Odyssey 2 was Magnavox's last stroll into consoles. And that's half right, because the Magnavox Odyssey 2 was the last time Magnavox was put in front of a console. But I mentioned Philips earlier, because Philips decided to continue publishing consoles and actually even continue the Odyssey line, but they did it in the Video Pack series, and they actually released the Video Pack 7400 in Europe around 1983, which lets you know why we never seen the Odyssey 3, because of the crash in the U.S., they decided to nix the idea of bringing the Aussie 3 over to the States.
So but, is there a collection for that video pack system?
No, because it was very limited release. Very limited.
So, well, that still means there's still a collection somewhere.
True. But it's one of those that is going to be very hard to find because it was a very small release. Very little people had it. It was never released outside of Europe, so you're not going to have too much luck stateside finding it. And the last little bit that rounds up is that we all know that from the Aussie 3, Philips didn't give up his dreams. It started working in other technologies, and it started working with CD-based stuff, then got with Nintendo after Nintendo said, no, I don't want to work with Sony, and then we eventually came up with the Philips CDI, which is actually the true swan song of the Odyssey kind of thing. You know, like Aussie Magnavox. I mean, the Magnavox Philips combination ended up with the Philips CDI being the true swan song of that whole legacy.
Okay. Well, so you would say that the end of the Odyssey 2 was the video game. Were they still releasing games up to like 82? 83, and whenever the video game crash happened,
In 1984 was the last time they made the system. That's when the system was discontinued.
Okay. Now, it said that there wasn't a whole lot of third-party releases other than those six that you stated?
Well, there were other ones, but there's not tons of information for it. They had Astro Dodge, Mayhem, Color Clash, Mage the Enchanted Crystals, Cavity, Stair Runner, Air Assault, and MIPT, and then the other ones I mentioned earlier.
Okay, so is that all you got for the Odyssey 2?
It sure is.
Well, all right, man. Well, shoot, that seemed like a short segment, huh?
Oh, it seemed a little short. A short lifespan of a console, short little discussion. I mean, if there's anything else you want to talk about in it, I mean, once again, we already said happy birthday to Ralph Baer, and he was the father of the Brown Box, and the Brown Box became the Odyssey, the original Odyssey. And then that became Aussie 2. So really, the Magnavox legacy,
I don't know the history of that one very well. So Ralph Baer came up with the Brown Box. He made that independently on his own, correct?
Correct.
And he sold it to Magnavox?
Well, the thing is, he was actually a television technician, and he was repairing TVs. And one of the things that he did when he came up with the Brown Box is that he was testing signals, and he realized that he can control essentially pixels on the screen by messing with different dials, and he made that into a demo to play games on, and he pitched it. I believe he was working at Magnavox at the time, so he just went to his higher execs, and that's how it went out. But he was a television technician. That's what he was doing at the time.
Okay, well, and then they released the Odyssey, which had, now the Odyssey had, it was just a Pong system, but it had interchangeable carts that would change the type of Pong you were playing, right?
Yes, that's how that more or less fell into it, because you had to use your imagination really hard, because they had all these different overlays, 12 different actual quote-unquote carts. They were just really just circuit boards with a number on top of it.
I got, yeah, they were just switches. They just switched between different games that were already in the system. The Telestar systems, who was that made by? Because that came out around the same time as that. That's also Gen 1, right?
Yeah, the Telestar systems are considered Gen 1, but that was done by Coleco.
Oh, okay.
Now Odyssey did release, outside of the Magnavox Odyssey, Magnavox released a number of Odyssey dedicated systems that just did a specific type of Pong between each different one, and that ranged from Odyssey 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, and then they jumped to 2000, all the way up to 5,000, but that was just a prototype that never got released.
Okay, so just like everything else, they just kind of throw numbers out there.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, at least they started in order, like, oh, 100 to 500, and then they're like, screw this, we're going upgrade.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I didn't know. So, I've seen Telestar systems all over the place. I didn't know that there was Odyssey, single-game Odyssey systems out there.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that they had those. They probably are rare. I mean, they're one of the more rarer of the Pong carts because the Telestars were popular.
But the Telestars were sold at Sears. I think that's where they got their big sale at, I believe. I could be wrong about that one, but I think, in fact, I'm trying to remember. I have a Telestar somewhere, and I thought it had a Sears tag on it.
More than likely.
take a break and then do 30-second reviews?
Yeah, we'll take a break and get into 30-second reviews.
Welcome back. So now we're going to get to our 30-second reviews. Last week I started, so I think, Josh, it's your turn.
I got to go first. Hold on a second.
Anyway, talk about hold on a second. I didn't even get my stopwatch. And to be honest, look, I listened to the show last week. I think you sharted me a couple seconds.
I did not short you a couple seconds.
I think you did.
I said go. It's not my fault. You had a few seconds of silence. Not my fault.
I'm just saying, I think this phone here has some kind of stopwatch. In my day, phones didn't have stopwatches.
Back in my day, I used to go to school uphill both ways in the snow in southern Louisiana at that.
I used to have to do calculus with an abacus.
That is just ridiculous.
All right, I'm set. I got 30 seconds. All right, what game are you going to do?
All right, so this week I am going to do Batman on the NES.
I'm just letting you know your time hasn't started yet. Just tell me what game you're doing.
Well, I know we say the game first. That's how we do this thing. So okay, I'm doing Batman on the NES by Sunsoft.
That should be interesting. Okay, ready, set, go.
All right, so Batman on the NES by Sunsoft. It was a kind of like a Mega Man kind of-ish game where you had these different power-ups. The cool little thing about it is also it was a hodgepodge kind of game where you had some Ninja Gaiden moments, you had some Mega Man moments. It was probably the best Batman game until the Arkham games, in my opinion. Don't know what to say about it. I'm just saying you need to play it. Everybody needs to play this game. That simple. I gotta keep talking. Oh God.
30 seconds over.
Oh God.
So you done?
Yeah, you play it though. You play it.
You play it. Okay. You need to do better next time.
I do. I'm sorry. I haven't played it.
Last time I didn't even get through the beginning. This week I'm going to do RC Pro-Am for the NES.
See, that one? I couldn't have gone 30 seconds on that game either. It's been too long since I played some of these games.
Oh. Okay, so tell me when to start.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right. RC Pro-Am on the NES is an over-the-top racing game where you look down on the track and then you race around and you're racing against three other cars. And at first you start with, I believe, a truck. Yeah, you start with a truck. And you have to race until you get all the each track, you try to pick up letters that spell out Nintendo. And once you get them all, you upgrade to the next vehicle up. And, man, I really enjoyed RC Pro-Am, to be honest.
Stop.
Play it. That's all I got.
All right, play it. Yeah, it's a great game. The thing that you have to make, the power ups and the upgrades.
You're right. You're right. I didn't even get into it. Yeah, I mean,
see, I'm too short. You're too long. We have to find a happy medium.
Exactly. It's a 30 second review, so let's just go on. We're not going to say any more about it.
All right.
All right. So I guess that's it. That's all we got. Actually, I do want to go over something, Josh. I have an idea for you. I'm thinking about adding an ad at the end of the show to anybody out there who wants to sell anything. Let's say you have a collection you're trying to sell. Let's say you're just sick of Sega and you just want to get rid of all your Sega products. And you put it up on eBay and you want to do an ad for it. Or if you have a new site that's coming out, a new podcast, anything, just email me or Josh. Which, me, it's bart@retrorundown.com or josh@retrorundown.com with the idea for whatever ad you want to do. And at the end of the show, me and Josh would do a quick little 10, 15, 20 second, 30 second ad, just letting you know. And you know what's the great thing about this ad, Josh?
What's that?
You know, Josh, how much do you think you would pay for an ad on a retro gaming podcast made by two friends?
I don't know. $5.99? $7.99?
$599? Well, what if I tell you it's less than $100?
I don't believe it. It can't be less than $100. What? So what is it? Is it $59.99? Come on.
How about free? Yes, we'll do the ad for free.
You can't just give this stuff away, man.
Actually, yes, this is free. Right now, and the reason we're doing this is that at the moment, we are using all free software, free sites to put on the podcast. The only thing we had to pay for was the domain name itself. So as long as we can keep the podcast free, I figure we'll do a free ad every show to help get, you know, and plus I just want to get some email. We'll do this just for the community. And then if we get a little bigger, if we start getting a few viewers, need more bandwidth than our free account can handle, we'll probably ask if you could give a little donation maybe. But that's not going to be for a while now, I don't think. I think to all the listeners out there, we're currently podcasting with SoundCloud. And in the next episode or two, we're going to, in fact, maybe this episode, we're going to have to switch to Podomatic because we're running out of room on SoundCloud. And I'm hoping I can make it where I don't have to change out the download feeds, but I may have to create a new feed link. And you're going to have to go back to the site, retrorundown.com, and get the new feed. And that'll have all the new podcasts on it. So that's just a side note that I don't want to lose any subscribers. But we are going to have to switch providers because we're just running out of room. And it looks like Podomatic will be able to do the job for us. So, yeah, if anybody has anything they want to sell, just email me or Josh, and we'll be happy to do a little ad for you. What else do you have, Josh? Do you have anything that you want to tell the community?
Is there anything I want to tell the community?
Well, I can tell you something, Josh. I remember, if I can remember the last episode, there was a little challenge put out to you. And did you fulfill it? Did you order your homebrew game?
I was hoping you wouldn't mention that. I was looking because I just don't want a homebrew game. I want a homebrew game that I really want. Like seeing that we talked about Battle Kid Fortress Apparel, I decided I wanted that one. However, the place that primarily sells it, which is Retro Zone, it's currently not available. And if I go on eBay, I have to pay $119 for it.
$119?
Yeah, so I decided to look what else they have. Retro Zone, and I might have to go and fall back on maybe the Ultimate Frogger Champion.
Okay. I feel your pain because I was kind of looking around, and I kind of like the idea of Halo 2600. And it looks like that one is actually on backlog right now, too. So, hey, if anybody's out there that wants to make a little money, it sounds like producing some of these homebrews probably would be a good money-making business.
It probably would be.
Did you order the Frogger Championship cart?
No, I haven't. I'm about to do it now. As we speak, I'm looking at the site, and I am going to order it.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about it. How is it different than regular Frogger? What system is it for?
Well, it's for the NES. As far as how is it different, no idea yet. They don't have any details on how it's different. I have to wait until it gets here to see.
Okay, well, you're telling me there's nowhere or the internet lacks the how it's different?
Well, I haven't looked at it yet. I just thought it was an interesting game. I figured it's a game I know. I like Frogger, so...
Okay, if you want to order it blind, how much is it going to look like it's going to run you?
Looks like it's going to run me about $50, so...
$50? Okay. You know what?
There are. You go to Retro Zone and you show me a cheap cart. The cheapest one up here is, let's see, $20, and it's called Chunk Out 2, so I'm assuming it's a puzzle game.
Okay, well, I've never been to Retro Zone, to be honest. I think Retro USB is the site I usually go to.
Well, it is. Retro USB, on top of the site, it says Retro Zone.
Oh, okay. The site is Retro USB.
Yeah, it is. It's retrousb.com, but on the top of the site, it always says Retro Zone, so that's why I end up calling it.
You know, let's do a funny side note while we're here. I looked up I was looking for Retro Zone, right? I kept hearing you talk about it. So I Google searched Retro Zone, and the only thing I could find was a vintage pornography site. Yeah, so I was like, man, they sell cards and show old boobies? That's interesting.
That is interesting.
We got Battle Kid 2, which I don't know what that is. Oh, that's unavailable.
Yeah, see?
I got you. Fortress Apparel, Glider, Gym Venture, which looks like Bejeweled.
Yeah.
It's an RPG puzzling game. Chunk Out 2, Mystic Pillars, Retro Vision, Super Snake, NES Snake 2 is 20 temporarily. Jesus, there's a lot of temporary unavailable.
That's what I'm saying. Like, half the games I'm like, oh yeah, I'll get that. Temporarily unavailable. Which well, now...
What about the repos? Which I know that's not a homebrew per se, but some of it is. I mean, they say it's not a homebrew, but it's, some of these games were never released on NES carts in America. They were released Famicom.
True. I was looking at some of that. I might want to do one of those, but those are not that cheap either. So, yeah. I think I might, instead of going with, the Frogger, seeing I still haven't clicked buy, I might go with, Gym Venture, just to see how it goes. I like puzzle games, and it has RPG elements, so why not try that out?
I got you. Yeah, man, I didn't realize, which I forgot, you'd probably go for NES, because, do you even have a working 2600?
Yeah, I have a working 2600. I also have a working 7800, which plays 2600 games.
But, hey, man, you know, there's other, I don't know if he still does it, but there's other sites that do homebrews. Yeah, this is the nicest site. Because I can't, I mean, when I put out the challenge, I wasn't expecting you to spend $50.
Yeah, I know.
And you wasn't either. yeah, we edit out what you need to edit out, by the way, of all this. But, so, yeah, we can extend the challenge if you need, you know, do your research, find me something you really want. I don't want you to just jump on it. I'll put the challenge to myself, too. We're both going to buy some type of homebrew in the coming months. What do you say about that?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So I think we're finally ready to wrap up the show. Josh, where can they find you?
They can find me at mylifeingaming.com.
You can find me at retrorundown.com. And if you want to contact us, you can contact us at bart@retrorundown.com, josh@retrorundown.com, post on our Facebook page, which is Retro Rundown at Facebook, on Facebook. Just look us up, give us a like. And, hey, as we find news stories and stuff, a lot of times we'll post it on Facebook. So if you're one of those Facebook guys, you can like us on there and keep up to date with all the news as it happens. You got anything else before we go, Josh?
I don't think so, Bart.
Well, all right. Josh, sign us out.
Whoopity wham wham wazzle.
Man, I'm not going to do this every week. we'll do better next time, guys.
Later, Bart.